Morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday, October 13th, 2013. Lucky day. Koyo Kubota here. We're glad you joined us. As I listen to the opening, just reminded of so many relationships. Importance of relationships, not only with people, but of course people, other people, I was going to say are the most important. Our relationships with this earth, with, you know, for our physical life is certainly important. What is so close to our heartfelt emotions, our relationships with significant other people. And as we can see it all over. It's so prevalent that sometimes we start to be aware of it. Sort of like what the air is for the birds and the water is for the fish. We're swimming in the ocean of relationships. We're flying in the air, and all the wind beneath our wings is other people's relationships, making us who we are. Well, I relate this as I wait for the opening to start, and the voice comes on describing the program, how to get into the program, and that's the voice of one of our Right on lay ministers that's providing leadership for their Trailblazers organization. And it's provided a lot of support, technical and otherwise, for Right Dawn Center. The music that comes on was composed by a lay minister, completed the program. She's studying music right now in the Midwest. Composed Bright Dawn Center's theme song. All these things make the show possible. Make a part of our Dharma work. And of course, all of the board members, family members here in Central California. I'm always very aware of that. And today's guest to give us a Dharma glimpse is my older brother, Don Kubose of Fowler, California. He's the Bright Dawn Center's executive board member. He's an elder statesman. And he always has interesting ideas for Dharma glimpses.
Here. This is a Dharma glimpse. I have a habit of watching TV while I have a sandwich for lunch. One recent time, I happened to flip by the Turner Classic Movies channel, and I saw that a movie made in the 1950s, The Incredible Shrinking Man, was just starting. I remember seeing it in the theater back then, so I decided to watch it. The basic story, told in the first person, is about a man who is exposed to a mysterious cloud while on a small boat in the ocean. This happens while his wife goes down to the cabin to get him a drink. A few months later, which his wife has just brought back from the cleaners, is too large, and he accuses her of mixing it up with the package with somebody else's. He then notices that his pants are also too large. Thus begins his realization that he is shrinking. He sees his doctor, but he is unable to help, and he continues to get smaller. Of course, he is upset and angry, and there are the requisite scenes where the family cat treats him as if something to play with, and his frustrations dealing with his small size. By this time, he is about 3 inches tall. When his his doctor tells him that there is nothing more he can do for him, he becomes very depressed. He finally realizes his true situation, and he accepts his reality. He ends up in the basement of his house, and after an epic battle with a tarantula, he escapes through a screen window to the outside world. The last scene in the movie shows him becoming even smaller, moving between the blades of grass, and saying, in effect, the words, "Now I'm going to become part of the vast universe." Now, I felt this was a very Buddhistic theme, showing acceptance and becoming one with the world. I don't think at that time, during the 50s, that Buddhism was as well known in American culture as it is today. I think this fact indicates how universal and encompassing Buddhist thought really is. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. I was thinking before the show started, well, I fill out a little sheet here that says who's going to give the Dharma glimpse according to the schedule. And I said, oh, today's Don giving the glimpse. And I was thinking about my relationship with my brother, and every Wednesday, his wife, Joyce, teaches a Tai Chi class on Wednesday mornings, and it's a really nice group. They use the facilities at the Fresno Temple. So I drive Adrian, my wife, over there, drop her off for the Tai Chi class, and then I go past Fresno Fowler's, about 15 minutes south of Fresno. So I go to my brother's place, and we get together. And then Adrian comes back with Joyce, and we have lunch together. So this, we usually do this every Wednesday morning. And the time that I spent with my brother every Wednesday morning, we talk, just sit and talk, and we always have something to talk about. I bounce things off him, and we catch up what happened during the week. Sometimes if I have something that needs fixing, some mechanical things, and it's, you know, I could bring it, or I could ask him about how to fix things, because he knows how to fix things. And he knows how to fix things in life too. You know, he has a good perspective from all the experience that he had, and then we have some sake. We share a little bit. We have some cold sake in the winter, summer, and we have hot sake when cold in the winter, so it's a very nice weekly thing that we do on a regular basis. And when we think about our relationships, part of the line that comes in the marriage ceremony that I do, the weddings, you know, there's a line that says, "All that we are comes from our relationships." We should realize the importance of our relationships. And, of course, marriage is one of the most important relationships and so forth. But as I thought of this, all that I am comes from relationships. And as I mentioned earlier, relationships could mean our relationships with the physical world, the social context. Okay? But most intimately, our interpersonal relationships with family and loved ones. And to recognize this, to raise it in our consciousness, to be aware of it, is an important part of the teachings, because it helps us to go beyond the notion of an independent self. And this is the real crux of the Buddhist teachings in Eastern philosophy. So whenever we recognize interdependency or remembering past loved ones, you see, when we say remembering past loved ones, sometimes that gets distorted into a stereotype of the Eastern cultural aspects of ancestor worship, or, you know. But this is something that, well, should not be misinterpreted, but it's an important message for the West, where we should, through family gatherings, through memorial observances, something that there's a greater flow of reality than just a static, unchanging, independent entity that we might call self. And in this line, as I was thinking about my mother in Fowler, California, which is where my mother was raised on the farm, her parents, who were my grandparents on my mother's side, in Japanese we call them Oji-chan and Oba-chan, you know, Oji-chan and Oba-chan Taniguchi, and they were the pioneers, what we call the Issei, first generation that came in the late 1800s or early 1900s, and the ones that settled in the Central Valley here, they were all farmers. And my grandparents had a 40-acre ranch that where they grew grapes for raisins. And when we went into the internment camps during World War II, I think at that time, non-citizens could not own property, so the property was put into my father's name to protect the property, ownership of the property. And of course, my father was at the time a young man, a single young man in the Oakland Bay Area, and he would make the drive down the 200 miles to Central California to visit his Lily of the Valley. He was courting my mom. And but anyway, after the Second World War, came back and started to farm again, and my mother's older brother, who was the oldest son of my grandparents, took over the farm. And then after he passed away a few years ago, his oldest son, who's my cousin, Earl, he's taking care of the ranch now. And that, we go there for family gatherings, maybe at least once a month. Somebody's having a birthday. You know, there's a lot of cousins, nephews and aunts, and, you know, and relationships by marriage and everything that are close. And we get together at the original location. Of course, there's a new remodeled house that was done, which is now getting kind of old. It might be over 30, 40 years that the new home was remodeled there. But the old barn is still there. The old Quaker Oil sign is still there. And this was the farm that when I was going to college in the 60s, whenever winter holidays came up, or, you know, Easter time, or whenever we had time off, and I would go down there and spend time, you know, and when I was a college student. So there are a lot of connections, historical connections to that place and what it represents, and we still get together, you know. It's really something, and it's very high in my memory whenever I'm driving over there from my place, about a 45-minute drive, and I say, I think of all these things, and it really puts a warm spot in me. And one of the odd sensations was at one of our recent gatherings, they showed some old movies. I guess they were old 8mm family movies of get-togethers there, and almost everyone was of that. Adults are all gone, all of our uncles and aunts, and they were celebrating a birthday, just like we do now. They were celebrating a birthday, and they were singing happy birthday, and in the background, the men, all the men, you could see that they were playing cards. And that's what we do now. Okay. One difference, of course, is that we help sing happy birthday, and we partake in all of that, and then we go upstairs and play cards, you know. But to see that, and I remember those card games when I was a young college student, and it was a treat to play cards with all the uncles. So it was a very, I don't know, nostalgic kind of thing that shows the interconnections and the relationships. Yeah, if I can just put my hands together, that's all I can do. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, you keep going, and you have a very beautiful October 13th. Thank you.